I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Class is in session. Good evening, class, and welcome to Binary Gamer. I'm your host, Tony Spears, and this is the show where passionate people talk passionately about the thing that we're passionate about, and that thing is video games. Until I can come up with a better intro sequence, that is probably going to remain it. I know it sounds really corny, but I think it kind of hits home with what we're trying to do here. Anyway, so let's get the bottom line up front. Binary Gamer is a weekly show that you can get on all of the podcasting applications of your choice, whether it be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Podcasts, not Google Play and Lookup Podcasts, but they actually have a Google Podcast Now app, and we are over there as well, so go and check that out. Or any of the other myriad number of podcasting apps that you may use, you can find Binary Gamer. You can also check us out over on YouTube. Head over to youtube.com, search Binary Gamers, Binary Gamers with an S, and check out the awesome stuff we're making over there. And of course, you can hit me up over on Twitter at iFlipOfTheSwitch, Twitter handle in the episode description down below. And we will just talk games. We can just chit-chat, do all that good jazz. I have been getting some interaction lately, which is nice. But, you know, definitely hit me up over there. It's not like the only way to get a hold of me, but, you know, it's probably one of the easiest. So with that, let's get down to the week that was. So this last week has seen a lot of changes here, primarily because I will be leaving Korea soon, which is fine by me. I am ready to go home, ready to go back and be with my family and all my friends and possibly not have to host this show solo anymore. Not that I mind doing it solo. It's just sometimes it's nice just to be able to talk with other people when it comes to this kind of stuff. But because I will be leaving soon, I am, taking certain steps. And one of those steps just happens to be cutting off my internet. I know it sounds dumb. It's like, well, you have a whole nother month. Like, why did you cut your internet off? The answer to that is very simple, my friends. I don't want to spend the $70 that it was going to cost me to have internet for this last month. I just didn't want to spend that money when I'm trying to get stuff together, trying to get things in place. The last thing I need to do is to spend money and on places and things that I don't need to be spending money. I have a lot of gifts to get, okay, before I go home, and I need the extra cash. But aside from that, it's not going to stop me from doing the podcast, but it will hinder a lot of things like research. Man, research was a pain this week, and not for any real reason other than the fact that I was just using my phone for everything, which isn't inherently bad, but definitely wasn't the easiest thing either, so that's fine. Come to find out, you can access all the same websites on your phone that you can anywhere else. So that's really nice. So now let's get to what we're actually playing. And so before I shut my internet off, I was on Steam and I was like, man, I need to get something that I can play offline. That'll be a lot of fun. Something that I can make last for this next month. And what I settled on was an oldie but a goodie, probably one of my favorite games, and that is Saints Row the Third. And man, oh man, that game is something special for sure. I played the first Saints Row back when it came out, and I thought it was pretty cool. But at the time, I was still kind of like, oh man, well it's not quite GTA. So, and then I never did play Saints Row 2, but then I remember I got Saints Row the Third, I think, through PlayStation Plus. I can't remember exactly when I had my PS3. And man, I devoured that game. It was freaking so much fun. I was like, this is over the top in just the right way. And then Saints Row 4 came out and I was following stuff for it, and the whole superpowers thing just didn't appeal to me. Like, I don't know. Like, when you can run at super speed, it's like, what's the point in getting a car? And why do I want to customize this car or care about any of these collectibles or anything? I mean, I almost did play the game just for the dubstep gun, but, you know, you watch enough YouTube videos and you're like, okay, I get it. Dubstep gun. But I kind of fell off after that. I never did play, like, Gat Out of Hell or any of that stuff. But as of right now, I'm playing a whole lot of Saints Row 3 or Saints Row 3rd. Having a lot of fun. I bought like the whole package thing. It was like, it's $20 on Steam. So if anybody listening is interested, by all means, man, go and get it and try it out, because it is a lot of fun. Even if you played it before, like, I've played this game before. I platinumed it when I had it on PS3, and man, it's still a buttload of fun. Aside from that, not been playing too much else. A little bit of Dead Cells here and there. I'm still at that wall I mentioned last week where I'm kind of like, okay, I need to step away from this for a bit and just not mess with it. Just kind of, you know, play at my own pace. And right now I have a lot of other things to play. So been doing a lot of that. So that's the week that was. And now I want to get into something that I've been meaning to do for a while now. And that is showcasing a little bit of the Dreamcast. Now, for those that are listening, you can't see, but right now I'm holding a very special little device here. You can probably hear it. Hold on. Well, no, not very ASMR of me, but regardless, I'm holding a virtual memory unit, or a VMU. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because, in my opinion, the VMU was like the last really cool, like, I guess you'd say like a necessity almost for a console. Before internal storage became a thing for consoles, we had memory cards. The N64 had a save pack, which was really cool, because I remember that for the N64, if you had the save pack, you could take it through certain NFL Blitz machines and you could plug it into the NFL Blitz machine and you could bring over your stats from Blitz on the 64 to the arcade machine. Same thing with, I believe it was Gauntlet Legends, did the same thing. And that was just, you could just transpose your character over to there. So like, you were starting out with, you know, like a level 19 Valkyrie instead of the level 1, and just getting completely wiped, even though you were just gonna be pumping quarters in that thing nonstop. Regardless though, memory cards have been a big deal, had been a big deal for a long time, ever since really the N64 and the PlayStation came out. The PS1 and the PS2 both relied on memory cards heavily, and it was cool in a way because it was cool because they kind of assumed that you and your friends had the same games, but you didn't have to like lug around your console to bring the game with you. And honestly, your friend didn't have to have the game either. Like, if you had a friend that had a PS2 and you had a PS2, and let's say you're playing Final Fantasy X, right? And you want to bring it over to play over at their house, right? On like a Saturday, you're staying over the weekend. You bring your memory card and you bring the game, and then you just plug the memory card in and you boot up the game, and poof, there it is. You got everything you need. And a lot of consoles utilize this technology for a really long time. But then it became kind of outdated when internal storage became a thing, especially once you started doing digital downloads for games, because they had to have large amounts of internal storage for these digital games. When things like Xbox Live and PSN became a thing, you had to have internal storage. And so they coupled the internal storage for the games along with the actual like save data for said games, which, to be perfectly honest, made it a lot easier to manage your saves and stuff like that. I mean, even if you take everything else to the side, like not even talking about the digital games themselves, it was a lot easier to be able to go into like the partitioned off like memory section of a console. And if you needed extra space or it was a game you weren't playing anymore, you just deleted the save file. It wasn't a big deal. I cannot tell you the number of PlayStation memory cards I had like over the course of having a PS1 and a PS2. Because like, I didn't want to get rid of these save files, and some games actually use the save files for certain things. But regardless of that though, there was a lot of really cool things that came along with using these memory cards, right? Well, then the Dreamcast comes out in 99. I'll never forget that. 2 days after my birthday. And we get into like something very Japan, something very Sega. And then you get the VMU. And the VMU has, four face buttons, one for mode, one for sleep, so you can save battery, and A and B. And then it has a D-pad on it and a little screen. The screen is, I believe, 48 dots tall and like 38 wide. I can't remember exactly. And a lot of people were like, well, what the hell is this thing? Like, what is the purpose of this? And then you plugged it into the top of your Dreamcast controller. That managed all your saves, which is cool. And you could do a whole lot of stuff. But then you could also do like mini games on it. It was essentially a Tamagotchi. And it had some like second screen, air quotes here, second screen functionality when it came to the to like certain games. Like I know it would show, I think, your health bar in Resident Evil Code Veronica. I know it acted as a map in some games. Skies of Arcadia, I think it showed your status. Like, so it showed like HP for a character, and then like if you had any buffs or debuffs, anything like that. It worked for like Power Stone, Power Stone 2, a couple fighting games. Time Stalkers, I know, had VMU functionality. I think Crazy Taxi just had like graphics that ran across it and stuff. But the one that got everybody, the one that set school ablaze for a while there was the Chao Adventure game. So in Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2, you get these little things called Chaos. And I'll be perfectly honest, it's really the only reason to play that game now. It's not... Those games are rough. They are fun. They have... there's a lot of really good memories tied to them, mostly to do with the music. But those games are pretty rough from a gameplay standpoint. Like, now I look back at it and I'm like, why is the camera forcing me to look this way? I'm trying to go around over here. Or why am I just bouncing off of this geometry? What the hell is going on? There's a lot of things about that game that you kind of shake your head at now. But one of the things you could do is, after you get... I think it's like once you get past the first level or so, you go to the Chao Garden. And the Chao Garden is just this little space. It's not very big. Like, in a game where Sonic has to like run to get up to speed, you can't even really run to get up to speed, which is probably a good thing because you would just be bouncing these Chaos around. But regardless, you get into the Chao Garden and you start out and there's an egg. And you're like, the hell's this egg, man? Egg man. Sorry, that was a bad joke. But you come up on the egg and you pick it up and you just kind of like swing it back and forth. It's a really weird motion. It's hard to explain, but you're just like, you're holding it and you're just kind of like you're rocking a baby, but you have an egg. And you're rocking it and you're rocking it and you're rocking it, and it takes way too long. But then finally, when you set it down, it hatches and there's a Chao. And Chaos are, for lack of a better word, Chaos are the epitome of innocence, I guess, in video games, because it comes out and it's a baby. It is a newborn entity. It doesn't know anything. They crawl around. They look incredibly adorable. They make incredibly cute sounds. And the Chaos are just flipping adorable. So then what they did was they tied in a couple games in the actual Sonic Adventure games. Like, there was a race, and then there's another one too. I can't remember off the top of my head what the other game was. But regardless, you could save your Chao to the VMU, and then you could trade Chaos with people, or you could fight your Chaos against other people's, very much like Digimon, because the top of the VMU has two connector ports. And so you take two VMUs and you connect them together, and you could do that to like swap saves. You could battle your Chaos. You could, there were other mini games as well that you could play just on the VMU. The VMU had a lot of gameplay built into it, which is really cool. But back to the Chaos. So you would save your Chaos there, and you could bring them around, and you know, you could show people like, this is my Chao, check it out. Little Tamagotchi looking stuff, right? And then one of the things that all the Sonic games have is every time you blow up a robot, you defeat an enemy, an animal pops out, right? Because Robotnik slash Eggman's whole shtick is he takes animals and he turns them into robots. But for some reason, he just like traps the animals inside the robots. I guess he's like powering the robots with the animals, but I don't know how that works exactly. Like, I don't know why this baby otter makes this like giant 10-foot tall walking death machine work, but sure, whatever. But you'd find all kinds of stuff. Cheetahs, otters, gorillas, penguins. Penguins were a big one. Peacocks, vultures, I think it was. And there's one other one I'm forgetting. Oh, and like a tiger or a lion. I can't remember. Some other type of cat. But anyway, so you'd find these, and then in Sonic Adventure 2, you also had like these like files of different colors. There was yellow, green, blue, and red. And they each correspond to different stats. Strength, endurance, intelligence, and speed. So along with the animals, you get these little files, and you collect them throughout the levels. And then when you get back to the Chao Garden, like Sonic or Tails or Knuckles, whoever you're playing, just kind of like spits them out. Just like, blah! And they fly over the place. And then you can take them, and you can give them to your Chaos. So with the files and everything, you go, and it just increases their stats. Makes them stronger, gives them better intelligence, makes them faster, more endurance, things like that. But the animals were the real kicker, because you would give like a penguin to your Chow, and then they do this like weird nuzzle slash kiss slash I couldn't identify it as a kid, and I'm kind of realizing now that I don't know what it is now, but they would do that, and then boop, he would have some feature of the animal. So like for the penguin, the goal was always to get the angry penguin eyebrows, because it makes the child look hilarious. But then like the peacocks, they would get like the feather or the tail feathers or the wings. And like the cheetahs, they would get like the paws. The vultures would give them wings too. And something else, I think their tail feathers as well. The gorillas, they would get like the hands or the feet. And there's otters. That's right, otters. And the otters would allow them to swim better and stuff like that. And there were just all these different animals and stuff. And so you could kind of customize your Chow and everything, right? So in Sonic Adventure 1, it's very basic. You're just doing that. And then Sonic Adventure 2 gets into like a weird alignment system where you can have like good Chows and bad Chows and neutral Chows and all this stuff. It gets really weird. Then the Chows grow up and you put them on your VMU and you can battle them. So half the point of Sonic Adventure was just getting your Chows more powerful to put them on your VMU to go fight your friends. And it was pretty cool. And you could also bring in your Chows into other people's Chow Gardens, and they could save them there. So like I could take my Chow and put it into my friend's Chow Garden, and then my Chow and his Chow would just be chilling out and having a good time and playing. Or in Sonic Adventure 2, you bring a dark Chow to your friend's like, you know, good Chow area, and they do this like, you know, Jedi and Sith little conflict there where they're like, I don't like you. Well, I don't like you either. And just kind of like poking at each other and stuff. It's the bad thing is all it is just adorable. It's all just incredibly cute. But getting back to the VMU, that isn't something that you can really do now in a physical sense. Now you can do it in just about every other sense of the word. I mean, you know, thanks to the power of the internet. The internet allows us to essentially do the same thing, but without the physical necessity of something like the VMU. But at the time, the VMU was freaking revolutionary. Like, you have to understand that when the Dreamcast came out, it was already like mind-bogglingly more beautiful than anything the PS2 was doing. Like, until the Xbox came out, the Dreamcast was it. Like, the Dreamcast was the epitome of graphics as far as everybody's concerned. Like, you go and you play early, like, Resident Evil 2, stuff like that. And then you play Code Veronica on the Dreamcast, and you're like, man, this looks amazing. Or the first time you boot up Shenmue, and you're like, holy crap, what is going on here? I'm playing a movie. Or you play Echo the Dolphin after you played Echo and Echo 2 on the Sega, and then, you know, you're essentially a dolphin in the ocean. You're like, this is all fantastic. But the VMU was something that so many people took, like, for granted. And it's hilarious to me because now, like at the time, the VMU was incredibly like technical, very technologically advanced. There was a lot going on in this thing. It had a whole bunch of storage. It could, you know, it could play mini games. You could swap stuff back and forth with the connectors on top and everything. There was a whole lot going on here. But now, technically by specs, this thing doesn't even have the same capability as like a high-end Texas Instrument calculator. I don't even know what the most recent model of TI calculator is, but I guarantee you it can do more computations than the VMU could. It's hilarious to me because the hardware in there, it's so underpowered in a lot of ways. One of the things I think is hilarious is the CPU was nicknamed the potato because it is a potato. It's the most basic form of CPU. It is an 8-bit CPU. Like, come on. Like, what are you really doing with that? not much except for, you know, Tamagotchi-ass Tamagotchi stuff and transferring your saves, but it's all it needed to do. But I think it's important to look back at stuff like this because it, well, one, it makes you very thankful for what you have now. Like with cloud saves and everything else and like, you know, your Steam library backing everything up to your account and stuff. Physical storage on your actual like consoles and stuff. I mean, the fact that like a 3DS has a memory card that is, you know, less than the size of my pinky nail and can hold 32 gigs of storage, you know, all these games and different save files and stuff like that. It's crazy to think that at the time it was all in this, like, it's like the size of a pack of Tic Tacs. And it's hilarious to me to think that at one point this was like this was it. This was the jam. This was everything that we ever needed. And I don't know, like now going back and looking at it, it's so novel to look at. And it's stuff that like it's part of the reason why emulation has become such a big thing with these older consoles, with things like the PlayStation, the PS2, even the GameCube, stuff like that, because those consoles have to have a, you know, a third apparatus in order to save the games. Now, I mean, stuff like the N64, because it was cart-based, would save stuff to the actual cart itself, which is all fine and dandy. The only reason you had the jump pack, or save pack, pardon me, is because you would want to move stuff back and forth. Take your GoldenEye save over to your homie's house and play, you know, some GoldenEye custom game that you made over there, stuff like that. But disc-based stuff, when disc-based media was becoming big, there was no way to write stuff to the disc. And so they had to come up with a solution, and that solution was these memory cards. And they really hit a peak with this. Now, you also have to think, too, that when the Xbox first came out, the Xbox had internal storage, but it also had slots very much like the Dreamcast does, because the Dreamcast controller is the housing. It's a house, kind of. It has a window. But is the housing for the VMU. And the Xbox very much did the same thing with the Duke. The original OG Xbox controller had the slots in the front, and you would put the save stuff, the memory card in there, which were not... They were just like the really... It was like almost like a VMU without a screen, but they were just like, you know, real weird and smooth, because they were all about like weird, like smooth edges with the Duke. Now that I think about it, ugh, no, that was not... So many people have nostalgia for that controller, and I just didn't like it. It felt too big for my hands, and I have big hands. You know what I mean? Like, well, not like mitts here, you know what I mean? But I have pretty big hands in comparison to others. But man, that thing just felt awkward in my hands. But regardless, like it, you know, even up to that point, it was still necessary or most of the time optional in order to move saves around to have some type of memory card, some type of, you know, physical memory unit. And like when they hit the peak with the VMU, which I honestly think was the peak. Like, you can say what you want as far as like how much storage I actually had, but regardless, like it was pretty freaking cool. Like, at the time, no one was complaining. It's pretty rad. But when the internet, you know, becomes a big thing and online play becomes a big thing, all of a sudden now, it's very much like, well, no, we can save everything to the cloud. Or they just start saving everything to the consoles themselves. If you look at, like, the size of a GameCube or the size of the Dreamcast, there was nowhere to put a hard drive in that thing. Like, they were tiny. Dreamcast is, like, it's smaller than a shoebox. Now you look at a lot of consoles now, and while they may be slim because, you know, hardware architecture has evolved over time, they're still pretty big. Like a PS4 Pro is a pretty beefy piece of machinery. The Xbox One, when it first came out, like it's like the size of a VCR. It may as well be a VCR, but those, you know, the architecture inside, while getting more streamlined for what it's actually pulling off, had to all fit in these boxes. And stuff like the GameCube, the Dreamcast, especially the Dreamcast, they were made more for like mobile play. It was made to be taken over to your friend's house and to play over there and then take it back to your own house. Same thing with the N64. The 64 is one of the most durable consoles ever devised by man. Like, I'm pretty sure at the bottom side of an Abrams is actually lined with old N64 casings, because you could drop that thing, you could drop things on that thing, and it wouldn't matter. It would just keep on chugging. Like now, like with my PS4, if I had dropped it at like a weird angle, if I dropped a period, I'd be like, well, that's it. It's game over. But God forbid you like hit it on a corner or something, like it jiggles something loose. Like it's game over, man. That's, you know, $300, $400 out the window. It's madness, I tell you. Madness. But regardless, and to bring things back to what I, to the original point, the VMU is the one of the highlights of not like physical media, but one of the highlights of like the peripherals that came out with consoles. The stuff that came along that like you realize you needed. Like you needed the VMU if you wanted to save stuff. You needed the VMU if you wanted to be able to interact with your friends as chows, if you wanted to save your own chow and show it to your buddies, things like that. But it also kind of showed us the like last dying gasp of like innovation in places that we weren't really expecting. When the Dreamcast came out, no one was expecting for the memory card, of all things, to have its own gameplay functionality, to have built-in mini games, to be able to, you know, to have like a Tamagotchi on it to act as a second screen for certain experiences and things. No one was expecting that, but it was something that Sega did, because Sega saw it as a means to add more to a platform that already had so much. And while the story of the Dreamcast is a short and, I mean, frankly, sad one, it still goes to show that there was a lot of innovation still happening in the late 90s and early 2000s, and they were trying to find ways to add more to games, not just to make good games, because they did make plenty of awesome games for the Dreamcast, but at the same time, to add more to the experience. And that's what the VMU really is. It's kind of a swan song to the added stuff that isn't DLC, that isn't, you know, pay $5 more and get this thing. I mean, granted, these things were like $30 at the time, but regardless, like you bought one VMU and you were good. So yeah, it is sad to see that, you know, we'll probably never see that again. You're never going to see consoles with physical memory cards like this again. You'll get stuff like the, you know, 3DS or the Switch, where they have, you know, the small micro SD cards or mini SD cards that go into those, but for the most part, you're never going to see something like the VMU or the, you know, the save pack for the N64 or just, you know, like PlayStation memory cards. You're not going to see that stuff ever again. And that is kind of a bummer. But at the same time, it's kind of cool to see just how far we've come when you really think about it. It has been a pretty cool road. It's really weird for me sometimes to realize that I have seen like the rise and fall of a lot of this stuff. When I was playing games at my, you know, my earliest memory of playing games is playing Super Mario Brothers on my stepbrother's Nintendo. And then later on, I got my own Super Nintendo. And then I got a Sega. And then we get a PlayStation. And that blew my mind. And then one day we realized, snap, man, we need a memory card. So we saved up $20 to get a memory card. And then going through and getting a PS2 and, you know, like seeing all these things happen, and then I see them like go away as well, where like, you know, putting in a phone jack into the back of your Dreamcast to play Phantasy Star Online through a dial-up connection, like that stuff is gone now because consoles have, you know, Wi-Fi adapters, or you can just plug an Ethernet port straight into them and you can play online in a number of games. You can shop online. You can access a web browser from your PS4. It's really weird for me to think that like I have seen this evolution and there's still only more yet to come. I can only imagine like at some point VR is going to get to the point to where like you'll be able to do anything you can do on your smartphone through a VR headset. And to me, that's both like revelatory and kind of frightening in a way, but not frightening in the like, oh, it's the end of civilization as we know it. Everyone's going to be strapped in with these these headsets. No, not that. It's the realization that like so much time has passed and so much is changing so quickly. That's the kind of scary part about it. But I mean, I always like to think of the future as something to look forward to, not the dread. So I'm actually looking forward to the day when I can, you know, order my umpteenth microphone on Amazon through my headset, and then just, you know, pop in and play some play some Saints Row the Third. Because, man, that would be fun. Man, Saints Row in VR would be pretty cool. But that's that is going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, you can get Binary Gamer in all the places that you listen to your podcast: iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcast. Anywhere you listen to your podcast, you can listen to Binary Gamer. Also, head over to YouTube, youtube.com, search Binary Gamers. You can find all the awesome stuff we do over there. And, of course, you can hit me up over on Twitter at iFlipTheSwitch. And that is going to do it for this week. Again, thank you very much for listening. Have an awesome day. Go feed your chows. In fact, go play with them. In fact, if you have Sonic Adventure, a working Dreamcast, and a VMU, just go hang out with your chows for a little bit. Enjoy that music. Man, that Chow Garden music is so good. Class dismissed.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.